All right, here we go. Now we're live. We are definitely live and in full effect. Nate and TD, you know it's that time every Friday, 6 p.m. Talk a little Titans. Definitely a privilege to do so. Nate, what's going on, man?
TD, what's up, man? I thought they was trying to hold us back from telling the people what's going on tonight, but we here. I'm appreciative.
Hey, for sure, man. You know, sometimes you got to make things happen through technical difficulties, and that's what we're going to do. And I guess we might as well start right off. The Colts game, beating the Titans to beat the Colts the way that they did last week, I think that means a lot for them going forward. I think it was one of those wins that kind of was a get back on track type of victory. What are your thoughts on that win? What does it mean for the Titans going forward?
Very big win, and especially in the manner that they were able to pull it off. Obviously, the Colts were missing a couple key bodies, but, you know, when you're facing a team as good as the Colts structurally, where they come out and play quality ball no matter who's out there, you know, to win in that fashion last week for the Titans was big. They take control of their own destiny here in the division and throughout the approach to the playoffs, and you don't have to necessarily wait on anyone else to allow you the platform to make it into the playoffs. You control your own destiny. So it's definitely a big win. And it solidifies what they want to do. I think they were great, obviously, in the run game and being physical and coming downhill offensively and allowing that run game on that offense to set the tone, not only for that offense, but the entire team, you know. And when you have that type of energy and that momentum going into your next game, it's definitely going to be a lot easier to handle.
I just really love what they did as far as establishing an area that they wanted to attack and just continuously attacking it over and over again. That was relentless. And you're right. They control their own destiny now. And that's something that if you could have that going down the stretch, especially for what this offensive line and Derrick Henry have been able to do in December in the past, I think it's a good thing. And speaking of the offensive line and Derrick Henry, let's talk about them a little bit, because I think Nate Davis is really become an outstanding guard. And if you look at pretty much all of Derrick Henry's big plays, you know, 64 is in there one way or another making things happen.
Definitely. You see just the continuity coming together with this offensive line. One thing, you know, I didn't never have, obviously, the opportunity to play the positions in itself, but being in that locker room, one thing you find out that's true about the offensive line is it's the foundation not only of your offense but your team. You know, when those guys are bonding, when they're together, they kind of live in their own world. You know, a lot of them are bigger guys that, you know, enjoy the big man activities like lunch and dinner. You know what I'm saying? So a lot of the time, you know, those guys live in their own world. They do their own things, but they're so close-knit of a group. And when you get that continuity with guys and they beginning to grow together, it shows on the field. And as you stated with Nate Davis, I think, you know, there's been a slew of guys that's been doing an awesome job, you know, trying to handle the left tackle job throughout the season after Taylor's gone, and just the number of bodies that they've had over there. But it's just obvious at this time that the Titans offensive line room is under good construction. They understand that, you know, no matter who's in what position, they're going to do the best that they can. And they're a grinded out team. You know, Ben Jones, obviously, is probably a huge focal point of that room and when it comes to leadership because of his ability and his experience throughout the league. So, I mean, it's exactly what I expected. You know, as long as they can get some bodies to stay in those positions for a number of games, I expect them to continue getting better together, continue being physical, and open up space for Derrick to operate.
No doubt. And that left tackle position has, dare I say, become solidified, right? David Quesenberry has done a solid job the last couple of weeks. And I think that's just a testament to him. And, you know, I liked how he spoke a little bit about, you know, his relationship with Mike Vrabel and how special it was for him to be able to get his first start under Mike Vrabel. You know, that was a cool experience for him. And it wasn't too big for him. He went out there and he did what he had to do. Now, it's going to be a bigger task this week, and we'll get into that, you know, with Myles Garrett. But I think when you look at that team overall on the offensive line, as you mentioned, they are pretty much the catalyst, and Derrick Henry behind them, man, that's something that's going to be quite a task for these defenses to stop. You know, Derrick Henry, he's going to push for 2,000 yards. I don't know if he'll get it. It'll take an awful lot, 743 yards to get to 2,000. But, you know, this offensive line is definitely going to do everything they can to get him there. Let's flip it to the other side.
Quick note, though, TD. I do want to add that my last year in Houston, I actually played on that team when Quez was going through his whole treatment with his cancer. So definitely, I know Quez. He's a great guy, great energy. You know, obviously wasn't playing when I was playing, but going through his treatments through chemotherapy and those things went with his cancer situation. But, you know, he was always around the locker room. So it's definitely a heartwarming and not only a proud moment to see all of his hard work. His journey has come together for him to have this opportunity. Definitely dope to see him on a personal level getting this opportunity.
No doubt. And it's only right to mention that. I'm glad you did. When we look at the other side of the football, though, there were some improvements on defense. Definitely. I think you actually saw legitimate coverage. And in fact, there was a coverage sack. You know, Jeffrey Simmons was able to get to the quarterback because Phillip Rivers had to recoil a couple times because everything was shut down the field. So let's look at some of the guys that have stood out. You know, Breon Borders, Malcolm Butler, Desmond King. These guys are all playing pretty solid football. Now you got the back end helping that front end.
Definitely. I think it just kind of alludes to, and I'm going to go here with this situation, that it just kind of alludes to the situation that I've been talking about this whole time, and it's Malcolm Butler's energy. This guy is going to go compete. And it's contagious, obviously. I mean, you get a guy that goes out there and may give up a 10 to 15 yard pass, but the very next play, if you're his teammate, you seeing him going back out there and competing and talking and still making sure that his opponent knows he's there, that rubs off. And it's definitely obviously showing up emotionally on the other side with Breon Borders. I've been seeing a lot more energetic play from him. He's being a lot more aggressive and confident in what he's able to do. And he's breaking on a lot of balls. I mean, this guy is coming along emotionally on the field. And when you guys has a guy out there that's able to play with the confidence and allow his emotions to flow through the game, that's a guy that's becoming comfortable. And I truly believe that these things are happening just because of Malcolm's stability with his attitude and approach towards the game. It doesn't matter throughout this whole season how they've been questioned on the back end and what they've been capable of doing. But regardless of it, when you turn the games on and you watch them, you can see that Malcolm Butler is going to play at a high intensity of passion emotionally when it comes to approaching this game. And I just think it's rubbed off. You know, I think it's truly been a leadership role for Malcolm this year. It's alluded to them becoming better. And as we stated, you know, it's given the opportunity for that front seven to start getting home and making some plays on the quarterback.
No doubt about it. And it's really interesting watching how all this is coming together. And we talked earlier this year about just having confidence in the guys on the outside, right? And being willing to put them in some man situations and blitz. And you're seeing Kenny Vaccaro, Desmond King, these guys are getting used on the blitzes and they're doing a solid job getting pressure. But I think the main thing up front for me, Jeffrey Simmons is doing his thing without a doubt, but I've been really impressed with Tyrann Tartt and watching the end zone copy of this past game. Man, he was kind of having his way with Quentin Nelson. I was impressed with how he was able to push him back. So that's another thing that is definitely opening up for this defense.
Definitely. The whole front seven in itself is just becoming to play better. As you said, you know, the obvious resurgence of the whole entire year for Jeffrey is there. But, you know, beyond the doubt, to have guys like Tyrann Tartt step in, I've seen David Long making some huge plays for this defense in the past week. To have these guys step in when you were expecting Jadeveon Clowney and Michael Beasley Vic Beasley at the beginning of the year, like, that's a refreshing moment for this Titans fan base because of these guys able to step in, may not be the expected heroes, but because they were waiting for an opportunity in their right position and their right time to step on the field and make a name for themselves, they've done exactly that. They've seized their opportunity. They stepped in and are continuing, as I would say, to make big plays up front And it's just about being consistent. Now, I think a lot of these guys will start getting a little bit more recognition when it comes to other teams' preparation. But obviously, you know, you have an opportunity where you have some guys that can get home in the pass rush game. And you also have some guys with David Long Jr. that I've been impressed with that's also doing some good things in a run game. You just got to continue to feed off of that and allow those guys to play. As you stated, you know, we've mentioned on this show about being confident in your players. And one thing you can't do is, you know, go out and restrict them and not allow them to play free ball, confident ball. And I think this coaching staff is starting to release the reins off these guys, no matter who is in there, giving these guys an opportunity to make some plays. And once these coaches become confident, then the players become confident. And that's what you see here.
Yeah, no doubt. I love it. David Long Jr., he's such a violent football player. So definitely, it's good you mentioned him as well. So, well, that's pretty much a bow around the Colts game. We obviously have to get into the Browns now, and we're going to go to a break. But when we come back, I want to talk a little bit about this rushing attack. I want to see if you think the Browns have a better rushing attack than the Titans. I mean, statistically they do, but let's get an explanation when we come back. All right, here we go, here we go. Nate, you ready to get into this Browns rushing attack?
Let's do it, man. I'm ready.
So, Nick Chubb, Kareem Hunt. Now, I don't know if it's before your time, but back in the day, the Browns, they had a duo, Kevin Mack and Ernest Biner, man. They used to do the thing. They both had 1,000 yards rushing in the 80s.
Go ahead.
I want to say 85 it was, but now you got this duo coming to town and Chubb and Hunt. And both of these guys, it's very likely that they both end up with 1,000 yards rushing. So let's talk about them, man. Nick Chubb, for me, when I watch him, man, it's surprising how explosive he is. But he is one of the most explosive backs in the game. He and Derrick Henry, these guys are similar in that they're such big backs that are so north and south, and their vision allows them to really make it happen on the field. Kareem Hunt is another one that just hits those holes with such suddenness. I think it's interesting having three backs in this game that are all legitimate options, you know, in the past and now to win a rushing title. So let's get right into it. What attack is better?
I'll tell you this. Well, I was going to say to you initially, you know, it's funny you bring up Ernest Biner. You know, EB was our running backs coach when I was in Tennessee. He was actually Chris Johnson and Lindell's running back coach for a period of time. So I know EB really well. I know exactly what you mean. Nick Chubb definitely is that guy that you mentioned. You know, not really expected to do the things he's doing, but he reminds me a lot of MJD. He reminds me a lot of Maurice Jones. Runs hard, runs strong, definitely got difficult to bring down, runs with impact, you know, and Kareem is definitely almost identical to Chubb. So to have a two-headed monster up there is definitely something beneficial for that team and giving them stability, especially with the absence of OBJ. Here's the thing, though. I'll say this. When it comes to comparisons of which is better, you know, I know – the Titan fan base may kill me on this, but just hear me out that, you know, as I've stated from day one, I'm a firm believer. And obviously there's different philosophies that goes different ways when it comes to structure of offensive coordinators and what they want to accomplish. But I'm just a firm believer of a two-headed monster. You know, I understand that Derek is obviously top two backs in this league. Definitely has owned the respect of his peers, and it's rightfully so. But this two-headed monster in Cleveland, it just creates something different. There's a lot of, you know, single back, eye back with Nick Chubb when you get in the game. And then you'll look in the game and they may be five spread wide and Kareem Hunt's lined up outside. You know, mm-hmm. This is the dynamic of what they're able to do, what they're able to get done. When you have two guys with two different abilities, but still capable of doing the essential basic thing for the position, which is being a running back. You can still put Kareem Hunt in the backfield, and he's capable to do anything that Nick Chubb does, you know, and it's great for this offense. It gives him a sense of balance. It gives him a two-headed monster. As I've stated before, you know, as a defender, when you have guys that have a unique style of run, when you get a different guy in there, no matter whether he's the same to tackle or different, it's complicated because now you have to adjust your whole game essentially. So, you know, I'm pretty sure it's definitely a task for defenses to see Nick Chubb go out of the game. And then you see another Pro Bowl caliber back in Kareem Hunt come in, knowing that you're still going to have to be on top of your game. And now that there's a different aspect in that he can also be accountable in the pass game, I think it's just a different dynamic that confuses, you know, defenses and give them disadvantage and more opportunities and ways than it does just facing one back. You know, obviously Derek has been able to do what he's able to do with a running game throughout this season that could have been up and down, especially with this offensive line and its injuries throughout the season. But here it is, his stability to be able to maintain throughout this season has been great. But, you know, when it comes to comparison at the end of the day for the main question, I definitely take a two-headed monster all day over one.
Yeah, and it's interesting because even without each other, right, when Chubb went down, Kareem Hunt toted the rock and he filled that role as a feature back perfectly. And we all know what Nick Chubb did last year, right? So it's crazy that they have two guys of this caliber that they could roll out. But the thing that's really interesting to me is because a lot of backs, right, they need to get carries after carries after carries. They need volume in order to be effective. These guys can alternate series and even alternate reps within a single series and still be effective. That's really interesting to me. And then when you look at the fourth quarter, both of these rushing attacks are legitimate options to put things away in the fourth quarter. And I think that's really where the main similarity is. They choke teams out late in the game with that onslaught. But for me, the strength of the Browns is that offensive line. And I think, obviously, Jack Conklin. But then when you look at a guy in Wyatt Teller who has developed into an outstanding guard, Joe Bitonio in there, and Jedrick Wills Jr., hey, I mean, that guy has filled in nicely at left tackle. So they're in really good shape from that perspective. So it's close. But I think because of that Browns offensive line, I think that gets a slight – edge over the Titans, but man, make no mistake about it, Derrick Henry in that rushing attack and those guys in front of him are definitely legitimate, and it's going to be a task for both teams. But right along with that, you got Baker Mayfield, and we know last year Mayfield, he wasn't that guy, but now he's protecting the football. They're using play action. How would you say Kevin Stefanski has made the passing game more Baker friendly?
Well, man, it hurts me to say this, to be honest with you, but I actually think the absence of OBJ has helped Baker. The extreme pressure of trying to make sure that connection was working, I think, was Baker's major downfall, and it wasn't working for him. Will they work that out in the future? I don't know. But, you know, allowing him to be observant to a full field through the play action game, which is obviously essential from their two-headed monster run game, is giving him an opportunity to do what he does best, not force any issues that may be not him. I don't think he's an isolated type of quarterback, meaning – you know, he's not going to go out like Aaron Rodgers and have a receiving with a connection like Devontae Adams. So no matter where he's at, he's able to find that guy and they're able to make magic work. I don't think that's Baker. I think Baker is going to be more effective in a system where he's capable of, you know, following the system, following the progressions of the reads and giving him the opportunity to hit the open guy. I think that's better for him. And this play action game, obviously, as you stated, off of this two-headed monster that they have in the backfield is giving him an opportunity to allow those guys to get open one-on-one with the opportunity to make plays. I think that hasn't been before. I think when OBJ was there and that situation in itself, it kind of forced Baker into trying to find OBJ to make it work. And I just don't think he was capable of doing that. I don't think, you know, his timing and accuracy was there enough to make isolated routes, one-on-one routes work with OBJ. And now that he's in this situation to come out and run more structured offensive plays that'll give him progression, I think it's just doing a good job for him and putting him in better position right now.
I tell you, it's really interesting you mentioned that with OBJ because, you know, I'm if I'm not mistaken, the last interception Mayfield threw was the one where OBJ got hurt. And it's just, look at last year, there were so many picks because he was forcing the ball into OBJ. So your point is definitely well taken. But do you think that this team would move on from Odell after this? I mean, is this like an indictment on whether or not they should cut bait and move on?
Well, here's the thing. There's always a bigger plan, obviously, when an organization is dealing with a guy with the caliber of OBJ. He not only brings you playmaking ability on the field, but obviously he's going to take your marketing for your organization through the roof. Yeah. I don't know if they're going to be willing enough to jeopardize that whole situation in itself, that opportunity, I will call it, in itself, for that organization to have a guy like OBJ surge again in their organization rather somewhere else. I don't know if they'll jeopardize that, but I think there will definitely be a huge emphasis on finding a sufficient role in an offense for OBJ to once again fluster with Baker. I think they'll definitely try to put some emphasis on trying to find that appropriate, you know, position for him and situation for Baker to do what he continues to do best in this play action offense with OBJ. But, you know, this is a league, as you stated, as I stated previously before, that, you know, as we look at talent a lot of times and the play on the field, it's a business first. You know, they always say that, you know, this is a business league and business goes both ways. So you'll never know, you know, obviously this opportunity with the absence of OBJ has given the Browns some life and they're winning now. So obviously that's definitely going to be something that to debate within the organization and the front office. And it creates opportunities. I mean, if you are looking at trading a guy and a name like OBJ, you're obviously going to receive some huge assets back. So, I mean, it's definitely an opportunity there, but we'll see. You know, it can go either way. I think they would want OBJ and his marketable name in Cleveland, but once you begin to win, and obviously if they make the playoff, then there's definitely going to be something to consider there moving forward.
And they still have Jarvis Landry, and Baker has definitely done a good job hooking up with him. It seems like since OBJ went down, they've kind of morphed Mayfield into more of a game manager, and then they've relied a lot more on the rushing attack. So for right now, that seems like the formula. But, you know, we also got to look at another offense in the game, and that's the Titans offense and what they could do against the Browns. So let's go ahead and get into that once we come back from the break.
Yeah. 4-4, man. Happy birthday,
home. Come on now.
It's only right.
Come on now.
Shout out to Kenny for making this happen with the dope bumps. So appropriate. All right. So here's the deal. This week, the Browns are going to be without Denzel Ward. They're shut down corner. I think this is an opportunity for A.J. Brown and Corey Davis, two receivers that could very well end up with 1,000 yards this season. When's the last time two Titans receivers had 1,000 yards in one season? That could be what we're looking at. I think this game this week is going to be an opportunity for both of these guys to put a large dent into that opportunity to make 1,000 yards. This should be a big game for A.J. Brown and Corey Davis.
Definitely looking for a huge game from both of these guys. When you look at the Browns' defense, obviously the stronghold will probably not be only their front four, but their pass rushing itself to be able to get home with that front four alone. Myles Garrett and Sheldon Richardson and themselves on the left side of that defense has been doing an outstanding job. But just their ability in a whole, you know, with Vernon on the other side as well, they've been doing some good things up front, obviously. So when you look at where, you know, where would the be the weakest point of this defense to attack with their, you know, first-round draft picks and Denzel Ward and Greedy being out right now, obviously, yeah. You have to attack in the air. You have to be able to sustain a great passing attack. And with Corey and AJ's ability, I think this is their time. You know, this is definitely going to be a huge week for them and their abilities to what they bring to this offense to make some plays off of the play-action game. I'm looking for a huge plays over the middle with the RPO play action that they love yes. to do with the dagger route. I think that's going to be essential because obviously this Browns defense is definitely going to want to stop Derrick Henry and what this run game can do to a defense throughout four quarters. So when they put all of their work and effort into stopping the Titans offensive run, I think this would definitely be the game where the receivers of the Titans would benefit.
A couple other things to consider. Jonnu Smith is out this week. And they're hopeful that Adam Humphries is back. He cleared concussion protocol. That means more targets for Brown and Davis, but it also means that I would expect to see more, you know, three receiver sets with those three out there. And whenever you could trot Adam Humphries out there, that's typically a gateway for more opportunities because he's that third down guy. You know, he's that one. It's third and seven. You know what he does? Spots up right behind the sticks. Catches the ball, falls forward, and it's a first down, and they keep moving. And he's kind of like a gatekeeper in that aspect. So I think there are some things to consider. I love the mention of the RPOs because that's something that, you know, Tannehill has been able to connect with on some really big plays. I'm so impressed with Corey Davis, though. You know, and I've said it before. I'll continue to say it. You know, this guy is playing with confidence, and I think, you know, just seeing him come around the way that he has, it's been great to see. At the same time, there's a guy up front by the name of Myles Garrett. And, man, that guy could ruin a passing attack quickly with how fast he could get to the quarterback.
Man, the guy is – his intangibles, his physical intangibles in itself is just tremendous. His length, his size, his speed, all are – a very dominating quality for an end, defensive end in this league. You know, he's not a – typically when you get guys that are of speed at defensive end, a lot of times you'll see tacklers just run them upfield, you know, just run them past the quarterback because a lot of times that's all they want to do anyway. They want to go outside. They want to attack the outside edge of a tackle and see if they can just beat him around the edge. And a lot of times you just get pushed upfield. But – with his ability, I mean, it's very reminiscent of Von Miller and those other guys that are capable of still getting inside of a tackle and making a play on a quarterback, still beating around a guy around the edge, not only with speed but with power, that at that very moment that tackle tries to push them upfield like anyone else, he's still able to cut that corner and restrain from the pressure that tackle may be giving him to still push back into the quarterback's pocket. His ability has definitely been something that has been progressing. I think even from Texas A&M, he's always been a guy in this league that had the ability to get to the quarterback. But I think his tool bag, as I would call it, is definitely opening up. He may have came in with just a hammer, but he's obviously getting to that needle nose wrench now. I mean, his ability to get to the quarterback and the different moves that he's able to do on both sides, you know, he's able to play both sides, you know, and switch some things up. So obviously he's definitely becoming more experienced and definitely has a unique ability, just like those of the great Von Millers and the Bosas and, you know, the TJ Watts of this league to get to that quarterback and cause some disruption.
I've also seen him use, you talk about extra moves. He's incorporated a spin move. So you mentioned Von Miller. Yes. Look, he's used one of his moves. And I tell you, you know, Myles Garrett, it's really interesting watching him because, as you mentioned, he is a guy that can get that outside rush. Mike Vrabel touched on this earlier this week. You know, he said that the strength and length that he's able to play with and how he's able to, even if they do try to run him up the field, he's still able to use that length to get his hand in there and knock the ball out the quarterback's hands. You see him do that so many times. And I thought it was cool the way Mike Vrabel said he reminded him of Simeon Rice. And that was, you know, that was a very good comparison. And it's just watching Myles Garrett. I remember him coming out of A&M, and I didn't think that he was going to be that good of a player because I watched him get blocked by tight ends like O.J. Howard and Evan Engram. And I was like, man, this guy's getting blocked by tight ends in college. I hate to see what's going to happen in the league. But he's actually become not only a disruptive pass rusher, he's a guy that can knife in there and take down a running back like Derrick Henry before he gets that momentum going. Right. I think that's something that we have to look at.
Definitely. I mean, like you said, like I stated, you know, when you first see this guy come in from Texas A&M, I also seen a guy that was very limited in his ability, a guy that just wanted to rush upfield, beat the guys on the outside of the edge and do whatever he could that way to get to the quarterback. But with that unique ability now to two gap, which is hold up the end of the offensive line and press them back to try to hold that edge as a lot of coordinators and coaches would want that end guy to do, those abilities and that strength and his unique length, it's given him that capability to make plays on running backs in short motions. I mean, excuse me, in short yardage and doing those things and being very disruptive. You know, as we stated, you know, seeing this guy coming out of college and only having one trick, so to say, and seeing the evolution of what he's becoming is definitely something that I'm sure that this Browns organization expected when they took him as high as they took him. You know, the sky's the limit. I think he'll continue to grow. And it's also one of those things that I kind of speak on often on this show when we speak about guys. I think, you know, no matter what position that we're talking about, no matter what, you know, end of the field, offensive, defensive, special teams, no matter what phase it may be, when you get a guy that's becoming more comfortable on that field, his talent is going to grow. His abilities are going to grow, and the things that he's capable of doing, obviously, are going to continue to grow. And that's just something that alludes to Myles Garrett and the impact that he's having on the game here of late.
No doubt about it. I'm glad we were able to get into that. But how do you see this rushing attack doing against the Browns? Is this a 125, 150-yard game for Derrick Henry?
I don't know if it's going to be well, definitely. I expect it to be. I don't think it's going to be a typical game. I don't expect it to be, you know, out the gate, you know, running downhill, creating, you know, big 20-yard runs, obviously. I expect, especially, I'm going to be honest with you, I know they're the Browns, but anytime I see a team from the AFC North, all I think is physical football. Mm-hmm. And when you get a team like the Browns that are going to come in here, understand the team and the Titans that they're playing, I'm pretty sure that first quarter and a half, this Browns team is going to be prepared for a physical game. But as I've stated before, you know, when you address this Titans offense and Derrick Henry, this is not a team that you can go in with strategy to tell yourself, okay, we're going to be physical with them for four quarters. As a defender, I also heard the commentators last game, Lewis Riddick, just continue to talk about not only having to tackle Derrick Henry, but still having to shed the blockers and shed the physical nature on the outside with Corey Davis and A.J. Brown, bigger receivers that are going to go inside and be physical with your safeties and make sure that everybody on that offense is being physical. As a defense, when you're dealing with that for a full four quarters, somewhere around that third quarter, mid-third quarter, your defense is going to wear down. Your defense is going to say, listen, enough is enough. We've been chasing A.J. Brown and trying to tackle him. We've been chasing Corey Davis, and he's been making plays on third down and being consistent all game. Now we have to continue to tackle this 240, 6'4" running back. Like, it's a huge task for a defense to take on just in the physical nature. And I think it's just going to have to be one of those games where the Titans stick with the run game, continue to be physical throughout the duration of the game, and allow it to wear down on this Browns defense and just continue to do what it does best, sustain those fourth quarter drives that'll keep the other teams offense off the field and allow Derrick Henry to wear down everybody else.
The fourth quarter. What did Joe Cain say in the program? Put the women and children to bed and go look for dinner.
Yes, sir.
That's what they're going to have to do in this game. So, man, we covered a lot. I think it's only right that we get into the playoff picture. So let's look at that when we come back from the break. I want to get Nate's best matchup for the Titans in the playoffs. We'll be right back. Hey, Nate, you two-stepping?
Ooh, yes, sir. You know how it go down on this song, man.
Yeah. All right, back from the break, Nate and TD. So before the break, I said we wanted to get your best matchup for the Titans in the playoffs. But before we do that, let's just look at the overall picture. Right now, obviously, the Steelers are the number one seed. The Chiefs are two. Titans at three. Bills, four. Browns, the fifth. Dolphins, the sixth. And Colts, the seventh. Raiders and Ravens are just outside looking in at 6-4. There are three teams that are 8-3. So, give or take what could happen in a few games, that three seed could turn into a six or anything like that. So, it's not etched in stone. But when you look at, you know, what would happen right now if the playoffs started, the Titans would have the Dolphins. What do you think are the best matchups for this team in the playoffs?
Well, when you look at the first round, I definitely – would be looking at, you know, obviously the Dolphins or the Browns for the first round would be a great matchup for this Titans team to face and try to get on the right track of trying to get to the end goal, which is the Lombardi. I think both teams will allow the Titans to be physical, fit their nature of offense, and both teams also have an ability with their run game, which the Titans defense could counteract, I think, but at the same time, you know, I think it really doesn't matter right now who they face, you know, with also the Colts sitting there with the possibility of moving up.
It could definitely change.
In itself, it definitely all can change, you know, and there's no telling, you know, what's going to happen at the shuffle end of this season, you know, with teams winning and losing, of how things may interchange, but the Titans right now, as I stated earlier in the show, are in a unique position. They're in a position to control their destiny. And I think with what they do best, being physical, controlling the time of possession throughout games, and with this defense coming along and beginning to play better on the back end and more comfortable and confident to make plays, I think this team is definitely sitting in a driver's position. It doesn't really matter who they face. They'll be sitting in a good position to go out and play some quality football. Be physical, be disciplined, and try to get to that end goal of getting to the Lombardi.
Is there a team out there that you just say, you know what, they absolutely do not want to face them in the playoffs? Are there any of those teams?
Well, obviously, I'll say, you know, just due to the nature of the history of the two, as much as I would be confident in them playing the Colts again, you know, I just think that's the game that they want to kind of stay away from, especially with DeForest Buckner being gone and Jonathan Taylor missing, being absent in the last game, and a couple other bodies that they had absent. I just think that Colts team would definitely be motivated to come out and change the outcome of what happened their very last game. But obviously, you know, the Titans, I would expect them to be prepared and ready to play high-quality football against the Colts. But it's just something about that game in itself, man. The history of trying to get over that hump with that organization and trying to make sure that they don't affect the future of the Titans immediate season, I think it's just been a doozy in itself, man. So out of all the teams that I think they may want to stay away from, it may be that Colts team to just getting that end goal accomplished.
Yeah, I mean, that's – to have to play a team three times in the season,
right.
That's not something that anybody wants. I think the Bills would be an intriguing matchup too, because I'm sure will be looking to have a little get back after that game earlier this year where the Titans blew them out. But either way, I think this is going to be a really interesting playoff picture, and it's good to actually see the Titans in position to actually control their own destiny for a change, as opposed to having to hope go through all these formulas and hope this team beats this team and that team. No, you don't have to do that this year. So that's a good thing for the Titans. Let's get into some key matchups real quick. Key matchups on offense. I'm just going to let you go ahead and take control of this. I want to get your opinion. Key matchup on offense, then we'll go defense, and we'll get a couple predictions.
Key match on up on offense, obviously, for me would be Quez against Myles Garrett, especially Myles Garrett returning off of COVID list, and I'm pretty sure his body is probably pretty fresh and ready to go and ready to impact this game. So it's definitely going to be a huge task for Devin Quisenberry this week. But I think, you know, obviously with the structure of what the Titans want to do offensively and schematically, I'm pretty sure Art Smith and Coach Vrabel understands that he'll be returning, and definitely Quiz would definitely probably get some chip help, either from the tackle or the running backs, to allow him to do what he does best, and that's protect the quarterback.
So what about on defense? Where do you go there?
On defense, I would probably lean towards just, oh, man, it's just so many things that I think this Titans defense, defense is going to have to be prepared for when you're facing this offense. I mean, from the two-headed monster with Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt, you know, this is going to be a long day for Evans to go out and make sure that he's solidifying and being on every tackle, and Jeffrey Simmons to make sure that they're also plugging the gaps. But I'll go one step further, and it's going to be Malcolm Butler against Jarvis Landry. I think they both kind of match each other. I think their emotion and their energy toward the game kind of excites their teams. I think it gets both of Malcolm for the defense, gets them going, and Jarvis for that offense gets them going with his intensity and his emotional approach toward the game. So I think that chess match in itself with those two is definitely going to be what takes each other over the edge. And Malcolm is definitely, I'm pretty sure, ready and willing to accept the challenge with Jarvis Landry.
Man, that's going to be a lot of energy and emotion in that matchup. So I'm glad you mentioned that, because they both play with so much passion. It's going to be cool to watch that. I want to see if they move Jarvis around, you know, because he's obviously a really good slot receiver in addition to playing on the outside. So we'll see how that works out. He could end up getting matched up with Desmond King, too, if he plays the slot. But let's move on to predictions. I'll give mine real quick. I have the Titans winning this game. I have them winning this game 35-28. And I think it's just going to be a fourth quarter drive where they just run the ball and Derrick Henry punches it in for the touchdown to pull ahead 35-28.
Right. Well, I'm definitely expecting this Titans defense to be prepared for a physical game, understanding that they definitely going to have to do their best to stop the run offense of the Cleveland Browns. So I'm definitely looking for a time of possession game here with both of these offenses looking to, you know, run the ball. So I'm going to go 28-14 Titans. I don't know if the Browns will be able to get on the board as much as, you know, expected, but I'm definitely looking for this Titans defense to come out and play some quality football and try to get some things going for this back end of the season running into the playoffs.
There you go, there. That's what I'm talking about. He said it with his chest, 28-14. Sir. What?
Yes.
Well, that's almost it. That's almost it. We have to end this on a particular segment, and there's something that has kind of been bothering me since I read this post this morning. So, Kenny, man, can I get that music? Yeah. Well, I'm going to let you know what makes me go, Nate. And I think you could speak on this as a receiver who was once a rookie in this league. I read an article, and ESPN.com, my own network, my own outlet, they did a post ranking rookie wide receiver season since 1985. The top 10. They had the audacity to not have A.J. Brown's rookie year last season on this list. And I just, for the life of me, don't get it. I don't understand, because you look at plays of touchdowns of 50 yards or more, no one had more as a rookie except for Randy Moss. He had a 1,000-yard season. I just, for the life of me, don't understand how they got some of these other guys on this list over A.J. Brown. Ernest Givens is on there. And, I give it to Ernest Givens. He was the first – A.J. Brown was the first one to have a 1,000-yard season as a rookie since Ernest Givens did in 86. But A.J. had 8 touchdowns. Givens had 3. He actually had more touchdowns looking at this than everyone except for Lee Evans, Keenan Allen, Odell, Randy Moss, Michael Thomas, and Justin Jefferson. So it's you know, they gotta get that together, man. That makes me go,
Well, you know what it is, unfortunately, man. The Nashville market just does not give enough national media respect, man. And it doesn't matter how good you are, what's going on. You know, I think, you know, obviously CJ got the recognition that he got being CJ2K, but a lot of it was due to his marketing. I still don't even think CJ got the recognition or the respect at the time that he deserved. You know what I'm saying? And I think that if those type of guys, CJ, AJ, Derek, were playing in, you know, New England or whatever else market, that New York, the New York markets, if they were in those markets, man, those guys' names would be definitely recognized as such. And it's definitely the same way with AJ. I think if he plays for any other, if he was in Dallas right now, oh my God, you know, he would be getting all the recognition going through the wazoo playing under that star, you know. But the sense is, you know, the national media just doesn't recognize the Nashville market like they should, in my opinion. And obviously, I think that's also disrespectful to AJ as well. I would agree with you. I think his rookie season alone is definitely should be respected more. And what he's been able to do to continue that success, I think, is definitely going overshadowed, you know. And I think the huge reason behind it is just being in the Nashville market, man. And hopefully things continue to change the more that they win.
Hey, no argument from me there. Well, that's the show. Nate, man, we keep hitting these home runs, man. I appreciate it. You make it easy, man. Thanks for all the insight and conversation. Thank you to everyone for tuning in. Shout out to Kenny for the bumps and making it happen, too. And we'll be back next week. Enjoy the games this weekend.